Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Said he's gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn.
In Savage Nation, I was supposed to have gone to Vegas today, but didn't. So instead, we're playing a little Elvis. Can you play it for a minute?
The devil may care.
I don't even like this.
I am just a devil with love to spare. So viva.
I like that part. All right. I'm one of the few people who enjoy Las Vegas, comma, dot, 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 from a distance. No, I actually enjoy Las Vegas. I was supposed to go today, was going to go, wasn't going to go, didn't go, and I didn't go. I hate travel. So here I am in front of the microphone, and what am I going to talk about? Whatever you want to talk about. I mean, I could tell you about Mao Zedong. I can tell you about Obama. I can tell you that we have a Maoist revolution, only you wouldn't understand it because you don't want to hear it. You don't want to understand that we have a communist revolution that has occurred in the United States of America inside the White House by a man named Barack Hussein Obama who surrounds himself with overt, outright, out in the front, right out of there, Mao Zedong lovers. And you say, well, what's wrong with that? Mao is this nice, friendly Chinese guy with a blue hat and a red star that, why didn't Jerry Brown and others give out the little red book in the 70s? Wasn't Mao like a cute Chinese guy? They killed 60 million Chinese. That's what Maoism is. The Marxist-Leninist tradition that preceded Mao Zedong was not what he used. Mao Zedong based his revolution on the power of the peasants in China. Mao Zedong saw, he said, energy in the illiterate peasants of China. He said they were poor and blank, and strength and violence were, he thought, inherent in their condition. Now, who do you think would be the equivalent of the peasants of China that Barack Hussein Obama, David Axelrod, and Rahm Emanuel are using, along with the czars, to motivate a Maoist revolution in the United States of America? In its early phases, mind you. It would be the peasants of America. And don't fool yourself into thinking that there are no peasants in America. The 30 million illegal aliens are peasants. Those on welfare are the peasants. The uneducated are peasants. Those who are full of hatred for those of us who work and have something are the people that the new Mao will use and is using because he sees strength and violence in them, in their condition. Now you say, this is a little too esoteric for me, Mike. Can you let it go? Okay, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll shift over to a propaganda piece from CNN. You know what CNN is. It's an arm of the Obama administration along with MSNBC. And they have these lightweight girls on it and the empty suit men with no secondary sexual characteristics who go along with the Maoist revolution on a daily basis, attacking primarily Christian heterosexual white males and families as often as they possibly can. They are viciously partisan, and now they're on the attack of talk radio. So you have to listen to some of this garbage. I want you to start not with clip 15, but I want you to hear the end of it. Listen to clip 20 from CNN.
And since more people listen more passionately to conservative talk radio, a little bit more about those listeners. They are mostly conservative, better educated, and more affluent than the typical listener. And they are engaged politically. According to Talkers Magazine, 74% vote. In light of that, does that make talk radio powerful politically? We'll examine that issue tomorrow.
Yes, it does, you empty schmuck. It makes us very powerful politically, which is why you were told by the Maoist in the administration to attack us, but you're not going to win. We'll drive you out of power, not us. We're not leaving. You're leaving, you piece of garbage, you. You're not driving us out of business. We're driving you out of business. You're never going to conduct a revolution in this country only because of us. We're on the front line. You got to run us over in order to get where you want to go, and you're not taking us down one by one. Let me tell you, we are in a war. We are in a war. And the enemies of freedom are every lipstick. And these empty suit men on CNN and MSNBC, the perverts at MSNBC, the verminous perverts, everything is a snicker and a sneer. Everything is a snicker and a sneer to the sexual deviants on MSNBC. And who do they have as a token conservative? The neo-Nazi they have on there. The bald neo-Nazi who wrote for Spiro Agnew, for whom everything wrong is based on the Jews. Who did they pick on MSNBC to represent the conservative viewpoint? The neo-fascist they pick, who wrote for Spiro Agnew, who says all the problems in the world are based on the Jews. He's a stereotype of the ugly white male. So they are the problem. Get out your hot oil with lipstick. If they think that they're going to run me out of business by calling me names, they don't know who they're dealing with. I'll tell you who they are. I want you to listen now to the reporter, the so-called reporter, the journalist for CNN. She's not partisan. She doesn't have a viewpoint. No. She just represents the Mao Zedong attitude that Obama would like her to have, given to her in talking points by David Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel. Listen to clip 16.
Wagler has already been listening to WHP's all-conservative lineup for more than 8 hours. And Michael Savage.
Go whine in the streets and leave me alone.
It's the kind of intense loyalty conservative talk radio attracts far more than liberal talk. 10 of the top 11 radio talk shows are conservative.
Why do you think that is, girl? The reason 10 of the top 11 radio talk shows are conservative, girl, is because your left-wing rats control all of television. Your left-wing rats control all the newspapers, and that's why your TVs and your newspapers are going in the toilet. You see, it's because we conservative, better educated, more affluent people don't buy your rotten, stinking left-wing newspapers anymore. We don't watch Tom Brokaw and his descendants on NBC anymore. None of the people that you propose should be giving people the news matter a whit to us. And people who listen to us need us. They don't need you. Now they get some quack, a psychiatrist. I never heard of her. No one has ever heard of her. They dig up some loser, probably from Brooklyn somewhere, a red diaper doper baby raised with the oil cloth and the International Ladies Garments Workers Union grandmother and the triangle shirtwaist fire. And over many doses of seltzer, which no doubt the carbon dioxide in the seltzer, which is why I figured out, by the way, why so many liberals are obsessed with global warming and the theory of carbon dioxide destroying the atmosphere. It's because they have so much carbon dioxide in their brains from all the years that they imbibed seltzer from the seltzer bottles of Brooklyn that they're obsessed with carbon dioxide. So here's one of them. Here's a psychiatrist talking about Rush Limbaugh in clip 17.
He's essentially kind of operating like the bully. And if you're on the playground, do you want to be the bully's, you know, under the bully's wing and go along with him and get, therefore, some power by proxy, too? Or do you want to be, like, left out alone on the playground where, you know, who knows who's going to take you out?
Salt says conservative talkers are more popular than liberal talkers because they attract the kind of person who likes strong, aggressive messages.
So this schmuck psychiatrist who I wouldn't let this idiot analyze a worm, let alone a human being, has the nerve to say that talk radio hosts like Rush or I are the bullies, and she says Axelrod is not a bully, Obama is not a bully. You're telling me that the White House is not bullying the rest of America by frightening everybody? We're the only thing standing between the real bullies, and you know it, Saltz, but you are a sellout, you're a prostitute. You're as low as they come. You're a pill-pushing prostitute with a medical degree, in my opinion. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It all the time. Talk radio, especially conservative talk, is so powerful. Some say it's made our country viciously partisan. Some also say it's become so influential it can actually determine who we elect to public office. Over the next 3 days, our goal is to examine if that's all really true. Today, a look at who's listening to talk radio and why.
So you're listening to the empty skirt with lipstick telling you that you are viciously partisan because you don't want to go down the road that Obama has laid out for you. The road paved by Marxists and Maoists is a road that you don't want to travel on, but that makes me viciously partisan because I point out who Obama is and his surrounding minions, who are all Maoists or Marxist, outright Marxist, outright Maoists. They hate capitalism. Well, maybe you say, well, I hate capitalism too. Look what the bankers have done. Well, so what is the opposite of capitalism? Well, let's say Zimbabwe is the opposite of capitalism. That's a nice democratic society. After all, the whites stole the land from the blacks. Wasn't it fair-minded of Mr. Mugabe to take the land and give it back to the blacks? And he did that. And although Zimbabwe had been a exporter of food when the whites were running the farms because they knew how to grow things and organize things, soon after Mugabe took the land and got rid of capitalism and gave it back to the peasants, it became a net importing country again. Zimbabwe became a basket case, begging for money, begging for food. So be very careful what you wish for, because you'll wind up on the begging line as well. You see, capitalism has provided, in my opinion, with all the excesses, obviously, and by the way, my condemnation of the Wall Street gang that we have now is not really a condemnation of capitalism per se. Capitalism, when constrained and with a conscience, is the greatest economic system the earth has ever seen. It is just that under Clinton and Bush, gangster capitalism was allowed to flourish. Gangster capitalism of the type practiced by Goldman Sachs, in my opinion, who has placed three Treasury secretaries in a row to manipulate the currency and steal from the Treasury. That's how I see it. That's what I would write in my book. Three Treasury secretaries in a row, starting with that fly fisherman phony piece of garbage. I remember the PR that used to come out, that little quiet one that worked for Clinton. And they have PR films of him fly fishing. I forget his name. Rubin, I think. Mr. Rubin. My flesh crawled every time I saw Rubin. I knew he was an eel. The next one and the next one. Who do you think they worked for? Goldman Sachs. Why are those pigs in Goldman Sachs allowed to pay each other hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses at a time like this when the government, meaning Obama, who they put in office, bailed them out? I think that answers the question, doesn't it? So while they pay off the gangster capitalists with obscene payments, at the same time, these genius Maoists are working to destroy capitalism and introduce Maoism in the United States of America. And it's very dangerous because they own the media. Except for conservative talk radio, they own the media. They own all the newspapers. I don't have to go through the letters again of the ABC, CBS, NBC. Do I have to go through that for you again? They own all of the alphabet channels. And so now they have one target left, where the independents like Michael Savage live. Both see it and say it like it is, are now the targets of this gangster regime that wants to put us out of business. New York City, WOR. Tony, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, I just wanted to say that I agree 100%. I didn't want to accept the fact at first, and I wanted to do my own research. And I do believe 100% that this administration is a revolution, and they are out to destroy everything that was good about this country, and I believe it 100%.
Well, in a general way, I agree with how you put it, but we don't know how far they are willing to go. We know that we have seen very dangerous inclinations in the radicals surrounding Obama. We know about the education czar boasting about Mao Zedong being one of her mentors. Did you know that there's now a manufacturing czar named Ron Blum, who says that Mao Zedong is his role model as well? I want you to listen to clip 11. I'm not making this one up. Listen, hold on now. You're listening to another communist appointed by Obama. Now listen to me. Why would he keep putting people who are naked Marxists and Maoists around him in positions called czar positions? Listen to clip 11.
Generally speaking, we get the joke. We know that the free market is nonsense. We know that the whole point is to game the system, to beat the market, or at least find someone who'll pay you a lot of money because they're convinced that there is a free lunch. We know this is largely about power, that it's an adults-only, no-limit game. We kind of agree with Mao that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun. And we get it that if you want a friend, you should get a dog.
We kind of agree that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun with that snotty, degenerate, collegey voice. Do you hear what this piece of garbage just said? The man was appointed as the manufacturing czar. We don't know who he is. We don't know if he ever ran a hot dog stand. But now he's in charge of manufacturing. I don't know what a manufacturing czar does, but he was handpicked by Obama. He's an outright Maoist. Education secretary, outright Maoist. Sunstein, outright Marxist. Right down the list. You're looking at it, idiots. Morons, wake up. There's a revolution that's occurred right under your nose. What, because you didn't read it in the New York Times? A man who inherited a great newspaper ran it into the toilet with his anti-capitalist ideas? Pinchy Sulzberger, that lunatic loser, inherits a great newspaper and runs it into the toilet, espousing anti-family, anti-male, anti-capitalist, anti-military, anti-police attitudes in his newspaper for 30 straight years, and no one wants to buy the rubbish because the only people who bought newspapers are the very is the very audience he hates and targets in his stinking newspaper. Same with all the newspapers. Look what Sam Zell did to himself. Bought a chain of newspapers, nobody reads them anymore. Why? Because the editorial staff has never been changed. It's the same Marxists in the newsrooms. The very people who are now begging for jobs, begging for bailouts, are losing their very income because of their own philosophies in the newspapers. Every article is slanted against the white Christian heterosexual male and his wife and their children. Every article, in one way or another, is anti-Christian, anti-police, anti-military. It is almost overtly pro-Al-Qaeda. Most of the newsmen in this country are a step away from supporting Al-Qaeda. You look at how they cover the vermin at Guantanamo. You take a look at how they have sympathy for the rats who are treated like kings in Guantanamo with ethnic Muslim meals and soccer balls and Qurans, and they say that it's equal to Auschwitz. And they wonder why no one wants to buy their stinking, filthy newspapers. So who are they going after? Me. Anybody else in talk radio who exposes them.
Savage.
Tell you what, I mean, I've given you my outburst of the day. I've given you it from the heart and from the brain, all in one. We have a revolution that has occurred in the United States of America. Many of you are cheering the revolution, but you don't know what happens when this takes place, when they have final and total power. I want you to ask yourself what might happen when Rahm Emanuel and Axelrod and the education czar and the manufacturing czar and this czar and that czar who espouse power comes out from the barrel of a gun with a snotty little collegey voice, have total power. Now bring in from the side curtain Bill Ayers and his friends, who wrote in the 60s when they created Students for a Democratic Society, that they would gladly kill 30 million people to see the revolution through. And you come to understand that once the guillotine starts to fall, it never stops falling. I want to tell you something. I've studied several revolutions in great detail. One was the French Revolution. The other was the Nazi Revolution. I've studied Mussolini's Revolution. And I've studied Mao's Revolution. I know a revolution when I see it. And I'll tell you, going back to the French Revolution, once the guillotine started to fall, it didn't limit itself to the enemies of the revolution. Many of those put under the guillotine were those who fought for the revolution. They didn't understand that they too would be the victim of the silent whisper that came down. They thought that they would be on the giving side, not the receiving side. Bloodshed, once it starts, is very hard to control. You have people who are espousing the equivalent of bloodshed. Now, why do I say it? I want you to listen again. This is Ron Blum. I don't know who this putz is, a manufacturing czar, who says that power comes from the barrel of a gun. Listen to clip 11 to this snotty piece of garbage.
Generally speaking, we get the joke. We know that the free market is nonsense. We know that the whole point is to game the system. to beat the market, or at least find someone who'll pay you a lot of money because they're convinced that there is a free lunch. We know this is largely about power, that it's an adults-only, no-limit game. We kind of agree with Mao that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun.
Let's stop right now. I don't know who this snotty rat face is, but I almost can guess that he has never built a business and never met a payroll. This is classic college talk. This is a snot-nosed piece of dreck from the gutters of Harvard, no doubt, who apparently appeals to Obama. But if he was alone in a college, we wouldn't pay attention to him. He's in the White House. Remember Van Jones? Remember Van Jones, the czar of whatever? I forgot what he was a czar of. He's gone. But why are these other Maoists and communists in there to begin with? How did Congress permit this imposter president to put so many dangerous radicals inside the White House without saying a word? The answer is that 98% of the people in Congress are nothing but glorified lobbyists. They work for special interests. They could care less about your freedom or my freedom. They care only about paying back the people who keep them in power. And obviously Obama and his minions know this. So they figure as long as they pay off and smear Wall Street, and they pay off and smear with enough stimulus money through Nancy Pelosi, who was the conduit of all the corrupt money, meaning all the money stolen from the people will rot in hell as far as they're concerned, with no power, no one to go to, because there's no representative government left. If you say that I'm making this up, let me step back from this for a minute. It's very difficult for you to follow a lot of what I'm saying and agree with it. I understand. I'm sitting here talking to you from a microphone. You're in a car, or you're at home, you know, your head's on children, sports, whether you're going to make a payment. I don't know, whatever your mind is on, whatever people worry about. Probably 98% of it is sexual if you're a male. Even if you're broke, your mind is still on sex. All right, that's the way it is. I'm a human being, so I understand it. So you tune in to Savage Nation, you like my voice or whatever, you figure I'm going to do a recipe or have some fun, you'll have a good time. But I see us in such danger, I don't know how to have a good time anymore. But then I have to step back and say to myself at night, okay, how much of this is real about Obama, and how much of this is fear about Obama? How much of this is fear about Obama, and how much of it is real about Obama? So as a trained scientist, I have to now go back to logic. Let's use logic in the scientific method. My fears tell me that Obama is a revolutionary of the Maoist type, because I told you there are 30 varieties of socialism at least. And I used to ask myself, what kind of socialist is he? Not a matter of whether he's a socialist. How could you even ask that question? Unless you're an ignorant moron who works for CNN. What do you mean, you're asking? Everyone in Europe's laughing. They know he's a socialist. Except the schmucks on CNN don't know it because they have no history. They're like brain dead. Educational zombies with lipstick. No secondary sexual characteristics amongst the males. They don't know he's a socialist. Everyone in Europe who has any sophistication understands he's a naked socialist. The only question is, what kind has he been? So you look around who he's appointed without any oversight by Congress. Every last one of them. Whether it's Ron Blum today, a so-called manufacturing czar, who says that we know that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun. Very clever, Ron. You're a real big man now. You're real powerful, Ronnie boy. Have you ever fired a gun, Ron? Or are you another one of the red diaper dopa babies from Brooklyn? Another seltzer boy from Brooklyn, no doubt. Another one steeped in hatred for America. Another one steeped in hatred for Christians. You want me to go down the list? I'll start smashing this microphone into the table in a minute. If you think I don't know who's inside the White House, and if you think I don't know their backgrounds and where they come from, you are mistaken. I could smell it on them. And I don't like the stench. But if they were limited to NYU and Harvard and the other denizens of losers, people who can't make a living anywhere else but inside the ivory tower, we wouldn't even pay attention to them. But here you have Barack Hussein Obama, a very shadowy man who came to power out of nowhere with money that no one knows where it came from. $900 million allegedly was raised in the last few months from where, we don't know. We suspect we know, foreign sources, Soros, we suspect. And now they have their man in the White House. You say, well, wait a minute, Soros is a capitalist, he's a billionaire. Why would he want a Maoist in office? I've told you 100 times I've studied revolutions. Because the way a revolution occurs is that the capitalist who puts the revolutionary in power thinks he can control the revolutionary. And what he finds out soon, within 2 to 3 years, that's how long it takes. And remember, this one has only been in office for 9 months. In 2 to 3 years, the puppet of the capitalist suddenly asserts himself, and the capitalist realizes he made a mistake and he has no power over the puppet. The puppet is now the master. And that's where Obama is going. This guy has just gotten started. This guy is only 9 months old as a president. He's got a long way to go. He's young, he's vigorous, strong, unlimited energy, and he's just warming up. So you say to yourself, okay, what are you getting at, Savage? I'm telling you that if you analyze this scientifically, pure logic, you sit back and you say, how much of this fear of Obama is real and how much it is baseless fear based upon the fact that you just don't like him because he's a left-winger? I said, well, let's analyze the facts. Has he surrounded himself with czars who are in love with Thomas Jefferson's democracy? No. Has he chosen czars who believe in freedom? No. Has he chosen czars who believe in individual liberty? No. He's chosen the opposite. He's chosen radical, rigid, brittle, left-wing, minuscule people from the universities who joke about Mao Zedong as though Mao Zedong is a benign figure. Mao Zedong was responsible for the deaths of 60 million Chinese, according to experts on China. That includes about 15 million who were executed outright for being counter-revolutionaries. 1 million party members and intellectuals were killed during Mao's Cultural Revolution, many by execution, others in work camps. 10 to 15 million people. Now, the bulk of the deaths for which Mao Zedong was responsible stemmed from the famines caused by his mad agricultural collectivization program. What was his mad agricultural collectivization program? What do I mean by that? Mao Zedong in China began to seize the land that he had promised the peasants, and then he forced the peasants that he used into collective farms right along the same lines as Joseph Stalin. Let's go to Russia for a minute. Joseph Stalin, when he took power in Russia after the Bolshevik Revolution, some years later, after the original Bolsheviks more or less were gone, along came the steel man, Stalin. That's a made-up name and means Stalin, steel man. And steel man, Russia was still producing enough agriculture to feed itself. The steel man didn't like the kulaks in Russia. Who were the kulaks? They were the capitalists, small capitalist farmers. Let's say you're a pig farmer, a wheat farmer, or an avocado grower. You are a kulak. What he did was he stole your land. He threw you off your own land. He took away your pig farm, your cattle farm, your wheat farm, your soy farm. He took it away from you, and he gave it to the government to run. He put dumb, idiot peasants who couldn't run anything to run the farms. And as a result, the farms stopped producing all of the products that the capitalists could produce, and people started to starve to death. You understand? Why did he do it? Because these farms were too individualistic, and so they forced the peasants into communes. All the property, not merely the land, became state property. All the property, not merely the land, became state property. And what was this? It caused famine. I am telling you that Obama is an inexperienced man. Obama is a very, very devious man. Obama is a very cagey man. Obama has limitless energy. And Obama does not even understand where this could lead. If he himself is not the evil inheritor of Maoism and would like to see such acts occur in America, then the people he has put in power, many of them, and I can name one after the other, are. So therefore, I say to you, give it 2 to 3 years. You know, great oaks from little acorns grow. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I mean, it's not a college class. It's AM talk radio. That's why I'm reluctant to. It's not like I'm such a smart guy. Just I'm older, and I've read a lot of this stuff, and I've studied revolutions, and I know who these radicals are because I met them in the 60s, and here they are now inside the White House. And what you don't understand is the danger you're in, because these loudmouth louts from Harvard, if they were to have their way, will introduce a decapitating revolution in this country. It will decapitate business. It will decapitate the church. It will decapitate the normal family. It will decapitate your very freedoms themselves. What you can't understand, though, is that things are not as black and white as you may think. Many of you can't follow this, and not because you're not smart enough. It's because the lack of sophistication of the American voter is almost overwhelmingly impossible to comprehend compared to the average European who knows a lot more about the spectra, for example, of socialism. We haven't any idea. We're so dumb here because of the media that you think Democrat, Republican is the whole story. There's Democrat, Republican, and Independent. The Democrat Party today is the Socialist Party USA. The Republican Party is socialism light, with a few exceptions. There is no American Party per se. Now, having said that, I want you to understand that when you say communist, I know what comes to your mind. You think of a red beret, and you think of people marching with a red banner somehow. You think of pictograms. You don't quite know what a communist is. And you don't know that some revolutionaries who were not communists were socialists who defended private property. Adolf Hitler was a socialist, National Socialist Party. I don't know how many different ways I have to say the same thing to you. Now, why am I bringing up Hitler? Isn't that offensive to say that about, I'm talking about Hitler now, in the midst of talking about Obama's czars? Well, I think it's interesting to talk about because if you study the Hitler Revolution, the Nazi Revolution, and if you study the Stalin Revolution, and then you study the revolution of Mao Zedong, and you study the revolution of Mussolini, you come to understand we're dealing with a revolutionary administration. It can lead to no good. It can lead only to bad. Now, what you don't know is that in the beginning, the Nazi Party defended private property right from the beginning. You don't know this. Although it was the NA, the National Socialist Party, and NSDAP, you thought was opposed to capitalism. But in its early years, it supported capitalism. How did they do it, though? Listen to this very carefully. In the early days, the Nazis said they were not anti-capitalist, but they distinguished between good capitalists and bad capitalists. And in so doing, the Nazis early on succeeded in staking out their own space in the political spectrum. They created their own space between the radical left, the SPD, and the KPD, which was critical of all forms of capitalism, and the right in Germany, which was a staunch proponent of big business. So in other words, Hitler instructed his early Reichstag delegates in 1926 to vote against the leftist-sponsored bill on the expropriation of properties. Why? He continued to defend private property. Why? Because he told his workers, Strasser and Goebbels, that he had to defend private property. It was necessary if the Nazi Party hoped to attract those who feared communism. This is how it works. Now, you've heard all this about Alinsky, Schminsky. Alinsky is a pimple on the wall of a bathhouse compared to what I'm talking to you about. Alinsky is nothing. Alinsky is dead. And these operatives from Chicago are very dangerous. Because although you may think that they're only after power and money, which wouldn't be so bad if they were, I would be 100% for them. If it was only about power and money, I wouldn't be spending my time on them. If I thought that Rahm Emanuel and Axelrod were only after power and money, I wouldn't care less. I'm used to that. I'm an American, and I myself like power and money. I respect it. I'm not a peasant, and I'm not a communist. But no, they're not after power and money in that regard. Within the heart of this administration, there is a core of Maoism, Marxism. They want a total and absolute reversal of everything this country has stood for. And if you think that you're going to wind up on top because you're on the bottom now, you're mistaken. If you're on the bottom now, you'll wind up with less. Because right now, the only reason you're not starving is because of the hard work of people like me. The only reason you're not starving is because my taxation is so high that people who are unlucky or lazy or whatever are able to live off the largesse in order to make enough money to live the lives we want to lead and pay half of it or more in taxes so that people who are less fortunate or outright bums can live off our hard work. So if you take out the people like us, the very people who are being targeted by CNN, the people who listen to talk radio, who they say are mostly conservative, better educated, and more affluent than the typical listener. If you take us out and you're on the bottom, and if you think you're going to get what we have, you're mistaken. You're going to wind up with less than you have. It's only because of the mostly conservative, better educated, and more affluent listeners to talk radio that you have anything at all. And I'm directing this directly at the poor and the downtrodden in this country. Be very careful what you are fostering in this country, because it is very dangerous. And understand that the television set is your worst enemy. I want to conclude this little lesson by telling you that it's unlikely that the millions of self-interested German citizens who voted for or joined the Nazi Party in 1932 could have realized at that time that their decision would culminate first in dictatorship, then in a world war, and finally the murder of millions of innocent people between 1939 and 1945. In other words, the evil that resulted had very ordinary and rational origins, and that applied to Germany before 1933 as much as it does to the United States before 2008. I will say to you, if you voted for Obama, and if you joined the Democrats in electing this bright young man with a great voice in 2008, I don't think you realized that your decision would have resulted first in what you're feeling now and what you're seeing they're doing. Now, let's stop right there. What is he doing that's so bad? Why do I say we're moving towards a dictatorship? A, because we are. But it's worse than just moving towards a dictatorship. The man has bankrupted the economy. I keep hearing the big lie. He inherited a $1 trillion deficit from Bush. That's true. So how do you cure it? By turning it into a $3 trillion deficit the first year? Any child who goes to grade school knows that if you have borrowed too much money, you have to pay it back first before you can borrow more. So the very system that he inherited, he's destroying even further. But there's a reason that Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel want greater and greater debt. There's a reason that Soros wants the dollar destroyed. There's a reason for all of this. Think Germany, wheelbarrows, and paper money.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
More people listen more passionately to conservative talk radio, a little bit more about those listeners. They are mostly conservative, better educated, and more affluent than the typical listener. And they are engaged politically. According to Talkers Magazine, 74% vote. In light of that, does that make talk radio powerful politically? We'll examine that issue tomorrow.
Of course it does, you empty skirt, you. Of course it makes us powerful politically, and if the election wasn't stolen, we wouldn't have a Maoist in the White House. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I've spent an hour, if you just joined us, explaining to you the difference between fears and rational concern. And I have told you that I analyze every night, am I overly frightened of Obama because of what I think is going on, or do I have evidence that will support my fears that we've had a revolution and that it's only in its infancy, and the man is only 9 months into his presidency, and only after 2 to 3 years will we really know how dangerous or how undangerous the man really is. And now, of course, the only thing standing between Obama and his revolution is conservative talk radio and the Internet. Let's not underestimate the power of Breitbart and Drudge and WorldNet Daily. But aside from these three sites, and aside from about five radio shows, there could be a total revolution in this country, and the average schmuck wouldn't even know it happened. They wouldn't care if it happened either, by the way. That's the worst part of it all. I know what indifference looks like. What percent of the American adult population is drugged? What percent of Congress is drugged? What percent of our boys are drugged? What percent of the military has been drugged by the medical government complex? What percent of adults have had their conscience destroyed by Prozac-like compounds so they wouldn't even react if they did see something they didn't like? I don't have an answer to those questions. I do know that the questions are very, very important, and that's why I'm raising them. There is some hope, though. Even the stooge CNN, run by the little man Klein, little Kleinekite, little Klein, the sneak behind the scenes of CNN, even little Klein can't control everybody in CNN. So they have a blog, CNNpolitics.com. So they have a CNN political director, Paul Steinhauser. So he runs a poll, which is already biased. Look at this. It says the CNN Research Corporation poll was conducted with 1,038 adult Americans questioned by telephone. They don't even say citizens, notice. They just say adult Americans. They don't say they were questioned in English only, do they? So in other words, we know the sampling error is probably 50%. They say it's 3%, but as a trained epidemiologist, it has no validity whatsoever. But even this biased left-wing CNN poll says that over 51% of the people disagree with Obama now. And that's a radical drop from April when 57% of the schmucks said they agreed with Obama on important issues. So already his popularity is plunging. The people are upset. They understand the guy is over his head. They don't like what he's doing to them with health care. They don't like how he's mismanaging the economy. They don't like how he's not supporting our troops. And they also, by the way, even though this is a biased poll, 56% of those in the biased poll don't approve of the Nobel Peace Prize's decision to award the prize to Barack Hussein Obama. Only a third of the schmucks interviewed believe that Obama has done enough to deserve the prize. So in other words, things are not that good for Axelrod and Rahm Emanuel. They may be able to game the system by putting in Marxists as czars and by attacking, for example, conservative talk radio through CNN and attacking Fox News, which is turning against them, by the way. But at the end of the day, the people themselves are not that stupid. Obama is an intelligent man, but he's a shallow man. There's a difference between intelligence and depth. Not all intelligent men are deep. He's an intelligent, shallow man. He has gotten along through his entire life by white liberals who have appeased him out of fear and guilt. Look, I've studied this in and out, and I know what this is all about. I know how they grease the skids for him every step of the way. This man has never had to struggle for anything. This is not a man who rose up from poverty through his own hard work. There's a lot more to that story that we can talk about at another time, other than the fake biography written by Bill Ayers. But we won't go into the biography right now. All I can tell you is that he is no longer benefiting from the affirmative action friends that he's had from his time at Punahou High School in Hawaii, where all of the rich liberals in Hawaii got on their hands and knees and said, "This is a great man, and we're going to grease the skids for him." And boy, did they ever put on that grease. They never expected it, but here he is in the White House much sooner than they thought he would be there. And the training wheels are breaking on his tricycle. The people are waking up. The dumbest electorate in the Western world, the American voter, even the dumbest electorate in the Western world, the most uneducated politically in the entire West, that doesn't even know what a socialist is. If you stopped even a person who went to college and said, "What is a socialist?" they wouldn't answer you. They couldn't answer you. They wouldn't even understand the question. So if you then went to the next step and said, "How about a Maoist or a Marxist?" they would walk away from you like you were an egghead crackpot. But remember that Maoism killed 60 million people. Marxism killed 90 million people in the last century. So revolutions have very high tolls in blood. Just be very, very careful about where we go. And I spent the last hour on this. And now I want to go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Let's go to Jimmy, our resident expert on WOR in New York. Jimmy, you've been holding. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, you're doing a great job exposing the communist theory and the history. There was a group years ago called the Communist Workers' Party, hardline communist, Maoist. They've attacked other communists for not being militant, violent enough. They fought with the police. They're suspected of murder, but they were never arrested for it. They changed their name to Asian Americans for Equality. They became a civil rights group. They get city, state, and federal money. They're like Acorn with the housing. 1992, they had a candidate running for city council. I was a campaign manager. We ran a candidate just to block this communist candidate. Anyway, to make a long story short, that communist candidate then, Margaret Chin, now won the primary, so she's going to be a city council member in New York, and nobody in the New York media covers the story.
You're only going to get your first communist in the supervisory role or in New York? Here in San Francisco, we have six of them. We have six or seven outright communists who hate the city, hate the actual taxpayer, hate the businesses, hate the family. They're all deviants, and they're all anti-capitalists. So you're lucky. You only have one out of six to worry about.
There's more here, but this is one that was covered in the past, and we have a guy, John Liu, a Chinese guy who supports communist China. He's now going to be the New York City controller, controlling our investments. So these are people...
All right, so we see it going on, but let's go back to Mao Zedong. Let's go back to Barack Obama. Sorry, I had a slip of the tongue there. How much of what I just said in your mind is rational, and how much of it do you think is simply fear-based?
Well, most of what you said was facts, and then your opinion based on the facts is common sense. I think it's worse. I think sometime in our future, I can't say 20 years, 50 years, I think we could have death camps. If you follow the trajectory, that's the path we're going toward.
Well, wait a minute. I'm going to play for the listener who thinks you're crazy and I'm crazier for having you on the show and not cutting you off, to a czar, another soundbite found, another czar. Does anyone know what this guy's background is? Here is a czar named Ron Blum, a so-called manufacturing czar, where he says that he agrees with Mao Zedong and that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun. Hold on and listen to clip 11.
Generally speaking, we get the joke. We know that the free market is nonsense. We know that the whole point is to game the system, to beat the market, or at least find someone who will pay you a lot of money because they're convinced that there is a free lunch. We know this is largely about power, that it's an adults-only, no-limit game. We kind of agree with Mao that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun.
Let's stop right here. Can someone tell me who Ron Blum is and why Obama would pick a man who says power comes from the barrel of a gun and put him inside the White House? Jimmy, what do you think of this statement from this cretin?
Well, he's one of millions of Americans who believe that. There's a lot more of them than people think. I've known.
But they're mainly in the universities. I met many of them in the 60s and 70s. They were all people who could never make it in business. They could never make it outside the ivory tower. They hated businessmen, but they lived off the largesse of businessmen through the taxes that gave them their fat cat checks and their tenure jobs. And they all hated the students more than you could imagine, all of these wonderful left-wing professors. They would talk about how many contact hours they had to face the horrible student, you know. And anyone who had no contact hours was considered a genius. He could just travel off to Copenhagen and get a sex change operation at university expense. But now all of a sudden these left-wing university types are inside the White House and they're espousing very dangerous rhetoric. Jimmy, I want to go on to one other thing. We know about the Holocaust that occurred in Germany, but what people don't know is that the rhetoric against the Jews did not originate in Germany. It originated in France. Anti-Semitic French philosophers prior to Hitler started to espouse the very ideas that the Nazi party picked up, and it led, of course, to the extermination of 6 million Jews and 7 million other people in death camps, Jimmy. So when we hear a czar in the White House saying political power comes from the barrel of a gun, why should we assume that they're not going to use the barrel of a gun to get more political power since the people are not going along with their revolution, Jimmy? Isn't it a rational fear?
Look, Red China was caught during the Clinton administration planning to send 100,000 machine guns to the street gangs in Los Angeles. Mao is used in America by the communists because they want to talk about people of color, the Asians, the blacks, the Hispanic. That's why they push Mao on the people of color in America. I have pictures of Saul Alinsky with Stokely Carmichael, the Black Panther leader. We're in big trouble.
All right, my friend. So in other words, when I go to sleep at night and I lay awake and I say how much of my diatribe against the czars and against Obama is real and how much of it is based upon fear, I have to say the more I analyze it, the more I realize it's rational and based upon reality. Jimmy, I'll be right back.
Savage.
Retrospect, one finds, that these restructurings are better than the slow death that our companies were in. But at the time and in the moment, it is almost never something we welcome. Nevertheless, this is a world we've had to learn about.
This is the Car Czar, Ron Blum, who says he agrees with Mao Zedong and thinks free markets are nonsense, and he says political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun. Did I tell you in the last hour that I could smell a red diaper dopa baby? Was I joking? Well, we just researched it, and here's what we found. Ron Blum, Car Czar in the labor Zionist tradition. I swear to God, everything I sensed was correct. Born in New York City and raised in Swarthmore, a suburb of Philadelphia, much of Blum's early life revolved around Habonim, a progressive labor Zionist youth movement that emphasizes cultural Judaism. That means no Judaism. Cultural Judaism is Judaism without God, by the way. Socialism and social justice. Did you hear what I just said to you? We have another communist inside the White House. I don't care that he went to Harvard Business School. I don't care that he worked with the United Steelworkers Union. All I can tell you is that here's another one. Here's another one uncovered. Here's another one unmasked, and he's inside the White House. Did I tell you what a red diaper dopa baby was? How many years have you been listening to my show? Have you heard me mock the RDDBs? You know, my first bestseller in the series, The Savage Nation, I used to talk about RDDBs, red diaper dopa babies. The word red diaper baby was well known when I was young. Those were kids who were raised by parents and grandparents who were communists. And they usually sent them to communist camps in the Pocono Mountains to get a further lesson in how bad America was. Then I added to it the other D, the dope, because I said I knew about the red diaper baby when I was a kid. I met some of them. They were the most horrendous people I had ever encountered in my life. To a man, they were horrible people, untrustworthy. Nothing about them was good. The more they talked about the people, the less they were to be trusted. There were sneaks, every last one of them, and they try to use a system to advantage themselves over those in the system that they wanted to conquer. That was my experience. I never liked red diaper babies. But then I said, well, what explains the virulence of the 70s, 60s, 70s radicals that we're seeing now in American universities, who are now in the White House, by the way? And I said, it's the other D, the dope. If you add marijuana to the RDB, you have a virulent form of a disease called communism. Now, I can't say whether or not Ron Blum was a doper. It's irrelevant. It's all satire anyway, RDDB. But did I tell you that I smelled it all over him? Listen to this, because you're not going to believe it. At age 10, Blum was sent with his two siblings to Camp Galil, a movement-run summer camp near Doylestown, Pennsylvania. He returned each season for the next 4 years and later became a camp counselor. It's as though I'm a genius and a psychic all in one. It's as though I have a crystal ball. The minute I heard this guy, Ron Blum, saying that political power comes from the barrel of a gun, and he agrees with Mao Zedong in that statement, I said, RDDB, here is the fact right in front of you. I'm not making it up. At age 10, Blum was sent with his two siblings to Camp Galil, a movement-run summer camp near Doylestown, PA. He returned each season for the next 4 years and later became a camp counselor. So now he's in the White House. A progressive labor Zionist youth, worked for the United Mine Workers, was an investment banker, did various work inside takeovers. No one knows which side he was on at any one time. And now, since he went, he was such a far leftist, and he comes from the labor Zionist movement, he is trusted by who? Who picked him? Was it Obama or Rahm Emanuel? Now, this is a very interesting question. We don't really know who Rahm Emanuel is. Nobody really knows who Rahm Emanuel is or where he got his power in America. We know Rahm Emanuel had a father who was a labor Zionist in Israel. His father was a revolutionary who fought in the Irgun. All wonderful stuff. Well, wonderful up to a point until you realize what the Irgun did to the other early Jewish revolutionaries when they caught them. If you think it was one happy little group, you're mistaken. They tortured each other and killed each other when they caught each other. But I'm not saying his father did that. Don't get me wrong. These were very tough Zionists, those who built Israel. Well, now, here we have Manchild in the Promised Land inside the White House. And who is he surrounding himself with? Outright Maoists, Marxists, labor Zionists. So what is the end result? Is this country going to look more like Israel or more like Mussolini's Italy or more like Stalin's Russia or more like Mao's China? You tell me.
Savage.
We've been exposing, I mean, Fox News has been doing a good job on this, on exposing the Maoists in the Obama administration, the outright Marxists. But I go a little deeper on the subject, and today we're looking at the manufacturing czar. He started as a car czar, Ron Blum. He did such a good job destroying General Motors and giving away Chrysler to a shady group in Italy that they rewarded him, and they moved him up now to be the czar of manufacturing policy for the Obama administration. But who is Ron Blum? Who is he? Well, we know he's an RDDB. We don't really know if he's a D. We know he's an RDB, Red Diaper Baby. How do I know it? I challenge him to prove me wrong. I'm calling Ron Blum a Red Diaper Baby. Why do I say that? Blum's parents met at a Habonim summer camp in the 1940s and moved to Israel intending to make Aliyah. Now, what is a Habonim summer camp? It's a progressive labor Zionist youth movement camp that emphasizes cultural Judaism, socialism, and social justice. What is cultural Judaism? It's Judaism without God. Okay, I know all about it. These are the cultural relativists. They thought that God was a liberal philosopher, not a supreme ruler and a creator of everything. Now, you say, okay, so he's a red diaper baby. So what? How does that affect me? Why should I care that he went to a commie camp at age 10? And he was brainwashed with his siblings at a communist camp near Doylestown, Pennsylvania. And he loved it so much that he became a camp counselor. What does that have to do with Obama, you're saying to me? Why should I care that he's a communist? After all, he went to Harvard Business School. Like all good communists, he wanted to become rich. That's the one thing you have to understand about communists. Every last labor Zionist I ever met in my life, if they did, they usually left the labor Zionism in the dirt with their childhood, with their dirty polo shirts and the empty seltzer bottles. But those who couldn't move on to become successful businessmen usually either went into academia, where they had tenure and a cushy job in the universities where they could put down businessmen, or they went to the next step and they went into government. So now you have a man who hit the quinilla here. Here's a guy who hit the quinilla, goes to Harvard, works for the United Steelworkers of America. He becomes an aide to this schmuck Ratner, who was the original car czar and was thrown out after 5 months because he did his job. So then they make this guy Blum the car czar, and now all of a sudden he goes from car czar to manufacturing czar. Again, the word czar. It should violate. It should make you. It should get you angry that Obama the communist, the Obama the overt Marxist revolutionary, surrounds himself with Marxist and Maoist revolutionaries, and not a peep comes out of the media, other than Fox News and Michael Savage, and not a peep comes out of the defunct, non-existent Republican Party. So here we are. Now you understand why they're targeting talk radio on a daily basis. Now you understand why Michael Savage was targeted in England by American operatives, in the Bush administration, by the way. I'm convinced it was Bush punishing me for the Dubai port steal. The more I've analyzed this, I can't prove it, but I'm pretty sure that the Saudis who control Bush and the folks in the United Arab Emirates wanted this done, and with a little help from the pill-popping loser hiding in a bunker in 10 Downing Street, this was a done deal. Incidentally, those of you who have bought a copy of Banned in Britain, the book has been printed. It will be shipped Thursday. My guess is the first copies will arrive on Monday, which is very exciting. It's like giving birth to a baby. I haven't seen it yet. I haven't even gotten my copy. But the minute it arrives next week, we're going to start a read-in on the Savage Nation of Banned in Britain. And there were about 100 copies left the last I checked of the first printing, first edition. And you can only buy it on michaelsavage.com. So, we've covered a lot of ground. Let's go to Tampa Bay, Florida. Michael, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Michael, when I've got a moment to have my valuable time to take away from my family, I turn to talk radio to get away from the fast food dribble that's on network TV. When I listen to you, I want to be enriched. My intellect will allow me to listen to more than 30 seconds to be entertained by more than just politics, but to be entertained by electric blue saddle stitch pants and I can just...
Well, Michael, let's put it to you this way. Most of the media is like white bread. It's refined white flour. It's devoid of any food value whatsoever. It's the equivalent of eating white bread. I like to think my show is whole grain. This is a whole food show in that sense. And that's what I work for. I work to deliver a whole food radio show. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. I try to bake a good bread every day that I get on this show.
And you do.
Well, I just spent an hour and a half talking about the communists around Obama. Doesn't it alarm you that he's been able to put overt socialists and communists in high places without a peep from the media, without a peep from the Republican Party? Doesn't it worry you?
It does. And if it weren't for you, that message wouldn't be out there.
Well, no. There's a guy on Fox News who copies me a few days. I'm going to prove it tomorrow. Tomorrow it will be Ron Blum on the blackboard with the whole background of Ron Blum on Hem's blackboard. That's all. Thanks for the call. Hem will have it on the blackboard tomorrow. San Diego, Chris, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. A few months ago, you coined the term Chairman Malbama on your show, and at the time I thought it was funny. I thought it was maybe a joke, a little satire, but now Anita Dunn openly admits as much. In the past, I think liberals would have vehemently denied it if you compared them to Mao or Marx, and today they just say thank you.
Yes, they're feeling empowered. The university slime who he has surrounded himself with, the overt Marxist, Maoist, Stalinists, are actually crowing about the fact that they revere these murderers. That is correct. Now, they may say that they don't believe in the murder, though. They only believe in the economic philosophy. But what they don't know, you can't have one without the other. You know, it's like a horse and carriage go together like a horse. Love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. Well, socialist philosophy, especially of the Maoist variety, goes together with mass murder the same way as love and marriage go together. Or at least once did.
You know,
I don't think there's been a divorce between Maoist philosophy and the desire to imprison and murder millions of people. Now, I would say that if you cornered this Ron Blum, the red diaper dopa baby car czar, and the labor Zionist background that he had, he'd be the last one to say, of course I don't want to hurt anybody. I am a labor Zionist socialist who is interested in social justice. Michael Savage is crazy to suggest that I believe in anything other than that. And all I want to do is provide good things for poor people. Well, that sounds very good. But do you think that after these early pioneers are thrown overboard by Obama, the next wave of czars? I do. I believe this is only the first wave in order to loosen up the enemy, and the enemy is us. Thanks for the call. So I'll continue to bake some whole grain bread on the Savage Nation. Call me whatever you want. Just get it right. The name is Savage. If someone could prove anything I've said wrong today, would you please call me? Can somebody prove to me that Ron Blum, manufacturing czar, is not a Zionist socialist? Please prove that that's not true, that he's not a socialist Zionist who went to a red diaper camp. Prove it to me. Prove me wrong. And somehow prove that that's not a problem for America. Somehow prove to me that that's healthy for America to have a labor Zionist czar inside the White House. Prove it to me. Prove me wrong. Allay my fears. New York City, WOR, Anna, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I'm going to be in England next week for a celebration, and I've decided I didn't want to do this, but I just feel I have no choice, so I'm going to have a little Michael Savage demonstration.
Oh, that's cute. Well, if you want to do that with a one-person demonstration, go to 10 Downing Street with a sign, say Free Savage, Free Michael Savage, Free Michael Savage from the banned list, or Unban Savage, Unban Michael Savage. Take it outside his 10 Downing Street.
Sounds good.
Anna, let me send you a free copy of Banned in Britain. I have very few copies left. You're getting one of the rare first printing, first edition. Period. End of story. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to San Francisco. Jan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. In reference to the him, as you call him, isn't it saying imitation is the sincerest form of compliment? So
absolutely. That's why I actually am fond of the him.
You're on the right track. And the
because he tries so hard for a high school dropout to act like he's a college professor with a blackboard is quite, it's almost charming in its own way.
You're so funny. That's why I love to listen to you every day, because you lift my spirits in the midst of all this darkness that we're facing.
There is. There's terrible, terrible darkness on the horizon. If you think this is bad, you're right. But this is only the first wave of the revolutionaries. This is something people don't understand. I'm a student of revolutions. Obama picked rather benign, nonviolent socialists as his czars for the first wave inside the White House. Give him time. Give him a year or two, and let's see who he picks for the next wave of czars and what they might do. Remember the most chilling thing he ever said, which the media covered up because the empty suits like Wolf Blitzer didn't want you to hear it, when he said he would create a military force in America, police force, that reported directly to him, more powerful than our own military. If that ever happens, if anyone sees any of that secret funding, that's the time that you know it's all over. Play that soundbite so you think I'm not making this up.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
Obama said we must have a civilian national security force that's just as strong, just as powerful, and just as well-funded as the U.S. military. There was a gentleman from Austria who conducted a revolution in Germany who created such a police force that answered only to him. The police force was called the SS. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Have a head of manufacturing who grew up as a labor Zionist say, all right, big deal, he likes to help the poor and downtrodden, he's a wonderful guy. Yet he quotes Mao Zedong and says that power comes out of the barrel of a gun. Somehow that doesn't match the socialist pacifism that seems to go along with his image. That's what worries me. Now, New York City once had the garment industry. It was once the place where almost all the clothing in America was manufactured domestically, right in, you know, made in New York, designed, cut, made in America, then was, you know, then the South, to come back to New York, blah, blah, blah. When Bill Clinton came along, he pushed NAFTA. I was one of the few people fighting against NAFTA along with other conservatives in the radio. I said NAFTA would destroy industry after industry in this country. But you listened to that con man, and you didn't listen to Michael Savage because I was a conservative, and you loved Bill Clinton the same way you love Obama. Many of you knee-jerk liberals don't understand sometimes that you don't even know what you understand and don't understand. I told you NAFTA would destroy. It was an industry killer. Then I told you that unions often kill industries. They kill them by demanding too much. So let's look at the facts. Clinton comes to power, 75% of all the clothing made in America, all the clothing worn in America is made in America. Listen to the number now. It was once about 98% of the clothing made in America, used in America, was made in America. Then Clinton comes, it's already slipping a little. It's already losing some traction here. And only 75% of all the clothing that's worn by Americans is made in America. That's when Clinton comes in. Then Clinton pushes NAFTA, North American Free Trade Association, which I said would wind up shipping jobs to Mexico and to China. And when Clinton leaves power 8 years later, only 25% of all the clothing made in America, worn in America, is made in America. So he takes it from 75% to 25% because of NAFTA and the unions. The ILGWU gets greedy, Dubinsky and his mob. They get greedy. They demand better wages for the workers and this and that and toilet bowls in the sky. And no one can live on it. It's not a living wage. And ay, 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 and give it to me. And I'm a Zionist, a socialist. And you got to give them good thing. And you're not going to work. And you're working. And what happens is they have no job at all. Does it sound familiar to you? Notice what happened to GM. The workers had it so bad that they went out of business. In other words, the AFL-CIO demanded so many benefits and such wages for the workers that they wound up losing their job altogether. So here you have a toxic cocktail of NAFTA, Democrat, and ILGWU killing the garment industry. And 98% of the schmucks who were thrown out of business in New York still vote Democrat. They're ignoramuses. They think they're geniuses. Little mini Marxists. Little Stalinists walking around in New York burping up a corned beef sandwich. They're all geniuses. So now what happened is you had 25% of the clothing worn in America was still being made in America. Then along comes the greatest imposter in American history, the worst president in the history of the world, George Bush. George Bush introduces not only more NAFTAism, but CAFTA. He goes obsessive on it. Every day he's pushing CAFTA, NAFTA, HAFTA, PAFTA, HAFTA, HAFTA, MAFTA, have to make CAFTA, have to make CAFTA, gotta get CAFTA, CLAFTA, CLAFTA, gotta get CAFTA. We gotta make sure the dresses are made in Peru, that no dresses are made in New York. We gotta have CAFTA, NAFTA, SHMAFTA, and half the schmucks in New York who lost their job are screaming, terrific, I want CAFTA, NAFTA, HAFTA, PAFTA, WAFTA. And now about 3% of the clothing worn in America, if that much, is made in America. The garment industry is gone, dead, killed by 16 years of Clinton Bush. Now enter stage left. We have a manufacturing czar enters from stage left who did such a good job decapitating General Motors that Obama has now promoted him to become manufacturing czar, hoping he can possibly decapitate all of manufacturing and whatever's left in America. I rest my case. I mean, I don't know how else to tell it to you. NAFTA, ILGWU, unions plus NAFTA, that's the end of the garment industry. I'm not anti-union. I was once a member of a union. I have spoken to truck drivers who told me what their conditions were like before the AFL-CIO and how it improved their lives. I understand all of that. But there's a balance point. You can only give a worker so much. Then they ship the jobs of manufacturing to, let's say, Sri Lanka. What happens? The communists in America, the social justice crowd, the schmucks, the social justice crowd, they're saying, oh, it's terrible working conditions, slave labor in Sri Lanka. Look at these children, the slave labor, they don't have toilets. It's horrible, we got to bring up their standard of living. Because I learned in the camp that the social justice is what God wanted. There's no God, there's only social justice. There's no God at all. God doesn't exist, only social justice. Internacional, that's all that exists. So we're going to help the poor little girls in Sri Lanka. So they helped them so much by attacking people who were selling clothing made in Sri Lanka, and they drive the people who are making the clothing in Sri Lanka out of business, and the girls who once had a slave labor job in a factory are now licking mud. They have no job at all. So in other words, there was a choice. When you have billions of people on the earth, not everybody can have a clean toilet and clean running water and electricity. Someone has to pay for it. And the fact of the matter is the communist, leftist, socialist psychos don't understand that. They don't understand it's a zero-sum game. If someone gets something, someone loses something in the world. And it's usually not Goldman Sachs. It's you. If it all came from the pigs on Wall Street who are rolling in mud like they've never rolled in, Obama comes along and he says, this is not going to go on. We're going to have regulation, blah, blah, blah. And you take a look at it. You take a look at the numbers that these people are taking out as bonuses, and you can't believe what you're looking at. These are people whose companies were bankrupt until the last Treasury secretary sacked the Treasury even further to bail out his friends on Wall Street, Paulson. And then instead of just coming back to life, they become bigger pigs than they were before. They go from 600-pound pigs to 1,200-pound pigs, and Obama says nothing about the bonus structure. We, the people, are left here gasping. So there's a lot of blame to go around. It's not limited to Obama. I've just shown you that Bush took the garment center and destroyed it altogether, as well as all other manufacturing. First it was Clinton, then Bush, 16 years of Clinton Bush, and now we have the Matador has come in. Bush was only the Toreador. Now we have the Matador in the White House, and he has the red cape, and behind the red cape is the sword. This is the Savage Nation. Let us hope this is not the final act for me or for America. Let us hope that God sees the truth but is only waiting.
Savage.
We'll be right back.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
So here we have Geert Wilders has gone back to England with freedom of speech to talk about his beliefs, how he's afraid of radical Islam, Islamicizing Europe, which any rational person knows is going on. And what do we see? We see Muslims in London calling for his death, the destruction of Israel, and taking over the entire world by Islam. And listen to the sound bites. Now, here's clip one where they say they're going to kill him, and he should learn from Theo van Gogh and others who were killed.
We're here to protest against this man, Geert Wilders, who insulted the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. We're here to give him a message that, like he's doing his interview today, hold up. He'll remain hold up, because obviously he knows that in Islam, the punishment for the one who insults the Prophet is capital punishment. And he should take lessons from people like Theo van Gogh and others who face the punishment.
The next one says there are Muslims all over the world who love the Prophet, and anyone who insults the Prophet, kill him. He says not that he will do it, but he needs to be warned of the consequences. Now, this kind of vermin is allowed in England, but Geert Wilders was banned by this pill-popping, degenerate, socialist, bum-running England who won't stand up to these Nazis?
He needs to know that there's Muslims in every corner of the earth. And these people, they all have love for the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he said, the one who insults any of the prophets, kill him. That is the capital punishment. Not necessarily that personally I'm going to carry out, but he should be warned that, you know, the consequences of it.
Now listen to clip three.
Geert Wilders has insulted the Prophet and insulted the Quran. And as we know, the Muslims, the Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, whoever insults the Prophet, kill him. So we are here to let the people know that we are not going to stand for this no more. That we are here to let the people know that the British, the UK, are hypocrites.
Whoever insults the Prophet, kill him. Now look at America. You've got people mocking Jesus every day. They put a picture of the crucifix in a jar of urine at the Brooklyn Museum. Another one makes a picture of Jesus or Mary in elephant dung. The Christians don't say kill him. They're insulted by it. They're repulsed by it. They're sickened by it, but they're modern people. These throwbacks are allowed in England calling for the death of anyone who they disagree with. Now listen to clip number four.
He says so many things against Islam, and he says so many things about Quran, and nothing happens to him, and he gets granted to come into the UK. So we're not going to stand for it here no more. We have come here to let the people know that this is no more. So we let the whole world know that if we had an Islamic State today, his head would be on the stake.
He said if they had an Islamic State today, his head would be on a stake. Is that what your liberals want, along with all of the other folks that they put heads on a stake? The gays, women who dare use a telephone? Is that what you're doing here? Which side are you on? You're on the side of the Maoists in the White House, or are you on the side of the people who know what's going on and what's coming unless you stand up to them?
What we say to him is, let him come outside. How is it that this man is now scared? And the police and the government are here supporting him and protecting him from the Muslims. Geert Wilders, the message is to him is to come outside and face the Muslims. Let him come outside, let the police go home. 2 minutes. 2 minutes and see how he's faced with the Islamic view on all of this, what he said.
The next one in clip six says, here's the leader, when he comes to the UK, Geert Wilders will meet the lions of Islam who will not put up with him.
When he comes to the UK, he meets the lions of Tawheed, the Muslims that won't stand for this rubbish. They want to say that he's an extremist. They want to say that he's not representing their views. But this dog is the open voice of democracy. We can see that what he says is in the hearts of every government in Europe. We can see that everything that he says is in the heart of every disbeliever.
You hear this? And he says he's against the voice of democracy because everything Geert Wilders says is actually in the hearts of every European government and in the heart of every disbeliever, meaning they should all be killed and converted. Then the next one, a clip, Seven Chance, and says, Islam will come. Islam will dominate from the east and from the west. No matter where he runs, this dog, Islam, will be implemented. And the crowd chants, Allah Akbar.
Wherever he goes, let him know that Islam will come. Islam will dominate. Islam will dominate the east of the east and the west of the west. So no matter where he runs, this dog, Islam will be implemented. So he can go and crawl under any rock.
You hear this?
He can go and crawl under any rock he wants in Europe. But no, Islam will come and it will conquer the UK. It will conquer Holland. It will conquer Rome. It will conquer the world.
Now in clip 9, you're not going to believe this, all you good liberals hiding behind your tolerance. The next one says Islam will enter every house on the face of the earth and either elevate or humiliate every person, and they will see the believers victorious and Israel destroyed and the non-believers destroyed and Islam dominate.
Islam will enter the house of every person on this world, and it will either elevate the person or will humiliate the person. And we will see the believers victorious. We will see Israel destroyed. We will see the European crusaders destroyed. And we will see Islam dominate.
This is Nazism. This is Hitler. And you say that you would have stood up to Hitler if he were alive today? You wouldn't stand up to a flea. You liberal wimps are killing the world because of your cowardice. And what do we have from the White House? We have Obama hiring czars. You heard about that story, but who are the czars? It seems most of them are outright Marxists, Leninists, or Maoists. Who is Mao Zedong? He killed 60 million fellow Chinese who would not go along with his vision of health care, his vision of a one-world media, his vision of a supreme leader, his vision of the great man himself. In other words, they now have almost total power. And which side are you on? Are you on the power of Mao Zedong or on the side of George Washington? Now, let's look at America and see if the radical Muslims in London who are calling for the death of Geert Wilders, the destruction of Israel, and their domination is any different than Harry Reid's advisors. You're not going to believe this. A top Nevada advisor predicted that the Nevada Democrat will vaporize his Republican challengers with attack ads. Harry Reid is corrupt. Harry Reid is trailing in the polls. Harry Reid is hated in his own state. But he's hired a team very much like the Taliban. A Reid advisor, speaking on the condition of Taliban anonymity, said, I expect Reid to vaporize Loudoun or Tarkanian or whoever is the opponent. Can you believe this? His opponent, Loudoun, said Nevadans have tired of Harry Reid's angry, vindictive threats. But today's threat is one that must be taken seriously, she said. After all, Senator Reid has shown remarkable skill in vaporizing Nevada jobs, vaporizing Nevada homeowners, vaporizing Nevada tax dollars, vaporizing our seniors' access to a solvent Medicare program and our residents' private health care choices. So there it is. Reid advisors want to vaporize the opponents. And you think that Democrats are compassionate? You think they will do anything to win or nothing to win? You think they won't destroy you once they have total power? What do you think they've just done to you, idiot? Your dollar is worth about 40% less than what it was worth when the great one took over this country. Now, on michaelsavage.com, you won't believe the headline story. The UN report has just been released that says counter-terror measures penalize transgender persons. I swear to God, they want the world to make transgender persons feel better at the risk of national and international security. And they said the controls focus too much on male bombers who may be dressed as females, and as a result, transgender persons are susceptible to increased harassment. So in other words, they'd rather see a plane go down than have a transgendered frisked. There's compassion, there's liberalism, the mental disorder. The most alarming article, which came up today, is on michaelsavage.com from WND. The UN sponsors a plan to greatly restrict free speech. They're calling for a worldwide crackdown of free speech through the UN, Now you understand why they've attacked Michael Savage first. I am the canary in the mine shaft. My book, Banned in Britain, is in the printer. There are only about 100 copies remaining. Read the secret emails where this conspiracy is exposed, only in Banned in Britain, only on michaelsavage.com, not available in bookstores for reasons you can figure out. Beware the bookstore, publishing, media, government complex.
Savage.
There's another member of the Obama administration who's come out clearly as a Maoist. Maoist. He killed 60 million Chinese, his own fellow Chinese. Maoism, Mao Zedong. Who is it? Ron Blum, the so-called manufacturing czar, says that the free market is nonsense, and Mao was right, I swear to you. I'm not making it up. Listen.
In retrospect, one finds that these restructurings are better than the slow death that our companies were in. But at the time and in the moment, It is almost never something we welcome. Nevertheless, this is a world we've had to learn about. Generally speaking, we get the joke. We know that the free market is nonsense. We know that the whole point is to game the system, to beat the market, or at least find someone who'll pay you a lot of money because they're convinced that there is a free lunch. We know this is largely about power, that it's an adults-only, no-limit game. We kind of agree with Mao that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun. And we get it, that if you want a friend, you should get a dog.
Political power comes from the barrel of a gun. We are living in a dictatorship, and it seems the government or a part of it is declaring that our children shall not eat meat. The Baltimore School District has declared Meatless Monday.
At the Hampstead Hill Academy in Baltimore, it's Meatless Monday. The only food served in the cafeteria? Vegetarian. The Baltimore City Schools implemented the district-wide policy this year as a way to cut costs and to promote healthier eating.
I've told you how when I was raising my kids, their friends, raised by leftist vegetarians, would come to my house and steal meat off my children's plates because they were so desperate for a real meal. Their growing bodies desperately needed real human food. Remember, we're not guinea pigs. We're not rabbits. Imagine an entire school of those children, and they're supported by PETA.
On the menu, vegetarian chili with rice, corn, green beans, and fruits. The policy is being embraced by the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, which presented the school district with its Proggy Award for the most progressive public school district 2009 and has been praised by the Center for a Livable Future.
We're not the food police, and so we know that families and children will make choices, and we don't want to judge those choices. We just want to provide more options.
A menu option or a public option? It's very difficult to find a cuisine today that really is an authentic cuisine. I once wrote an entire book on this, on ethnic cuisine. And the more I studied it, the more I discovered that there's almost no such thing as an authentic ethnic cuisine, particularly in America today. Let me give you an example. Let's start with the obvious. You take Jewish food. What is Jewish food? You think it's corned beef? You think it's brisket? You think it's gefilte fish? Wrong. Those are specific holiday foods of 19th century Europe in the ancestral homeland of the Arabian Peninsula or in the Middle East. If you were to look for authentic Jewish food, you'd have to eat Yemeni food. Yemeni food is authentic Jewish food. How many Jews eat food like that? Near zero. So now let's go to the next. You say, I'm going to have an Italian meal tonight. And what are you going to have for an Italian meal? I'm going to have veal parmesan, and I'm going to have a spaghetti, then I'm going to have spumoni ice cream or whatever the dessert is. Well, none of those things are Italian. Again, they're 19th century Italian holiday food festivals. The average Italian didn't eat those foods. You have to go back to, oh, did I love studying this when I studied it. It was one of my favorite investigations, this whole thing of ethnic foods. And you will find that there is a commonality in most cultures with regard to their original ethnic diet. And it was usually the following. It was a high grain diet, a high vegetable diet with small amounts of animal protein, period. End of story. With rare exception, And I mean, you have to set it in history. We're talking about how many thousands of years ago. You want me to go back to prehistory or 20,000 years ago, 200,000 years ago? I'm going back several thousand years, as far as we have to go right now. Almost all cultures traditionally ate high-grain diets, usually whole grains, because that's what they had, a large amount of vegetables when they could get them in season, and small amounts of animal protein because they didn't have large herds of animals. And they certainly didn't want to kill the animal that was producing milk and dairy. They needed the milk to make cheese and other dairy products. They didn't kill the animal for the meat. Okay, this whole concept of livestock is a rather recent phenomenon. So what we're eating is a complete distortion of the Neolithic man that's within all of us. Remember, you haven't changed genetically from the Neolithic man that we have evolved from. And someone wrote a book years ago, The Neolithic Diet, that was very clever, in fact. And the fact is the Neolithic diet is totally different than the one we're on right now. The Neolithic, and so then there are rare exceptions. For example, take the Greenland Eskimo who eats a traditional diet. The Greenland Eskimo lives on almost large amounts of blubber, seals, whale meat, and such. And they have amongst the lowest rate of heart attack in the human beings. Okay. Rock and roll. I want some rock and roll. Real rock and roll. Give me some real rock and roll right now on the Savage Nation. I want real rock and roll.
Come on, baby, let me
baby, that's
roll.
Good times roll.
Come on, baby, let me throw your soul.
Yeah.
Come on, baby, let me
that's more like
roll.
It. Roll I've been up with all of this.
Come on, baby, yes, this is me. This is something I just can't miss. Come on, baby, let the good times roll.
I personally want to wake up hear that Israel finally was Israel again. When it finally found itself in the good old days when they had Golda Meir as president and they defended themselves before they wound up vaporized over Jerusalem. I'd like to wake up and, I don't know, some pride. I'd like to feel some pride in being an American again. I mean, I wish that we would do it. I wish we'd send missiles off our submarines, off our aircraft carriers, launch those F-A-18 Hornets, use our B-1 bombers, use our B-2 bombers, use all of the trillions of dollars that you've mulked the public for with these weapon systems that you don't have the guts to use. For God's sakes, every day I wake up praying that our military would finally act against this monster in Iran and set the world back on its axis. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Obama Maoist administration, while trying to suppress the American opposition, is appeasing the world, this time with the UN and the UN's arms trade treaty. Joining us now from the Heritage Foundation is Ted Bromand to give us an update on what's going on in this situation.
Well, thanks very much, Michael, for having me on again to talk about the UN's efforts to negotiate an arms trade treaty. This is something I've spoken with you and with your listeners about before. But I think the time has come for an update because the Obama administration has made a very wrong-headed, very dangerous decision in the last week that the American public needs to be fully informed about. But let me start with just a little bit of background first. For the past 4 or 5 years, the UN General Assembly has been urging the nations of the world to get together and negotiate a treaty that would control the transfer of conventional arms from one nation to another. Now, the theory behind this is that it would stop terrorists and organized criminals from getting their hands on guns. And if that was all the treaty was going to do, I think there are a lot of people in this country and all around the world who would be in favor of it. But as usual with the UN, what it says and what it's going to do are going to be two entirely different things. The idea is that the treaty would set up a series of standards that each nation would have to judge their arms sales by, judge their arms transfers by, and ensure that these arms sales, these transfers, weren't going to terrorists, weren't going to criminals, weren't going to nations that indulge in egregious breaches of human rights, weren't going to promote genocide, and other things that almost everyone would oppose.
Well, it sounds like a good idea, but if the rest of the world is so worried about these guns getting into the wrong hands, why is it so easy for these dictators to get their hands on them?
The answer to that question is very simple. The United Nations member states, that is, all the member nations of the UN, sell them to these people. France supplies the dictators of sub-Saharan Africa. Venezuela supplies the terrorists that try to overthrow our ally in Colombia. Iran supplies the terrorist organizations of Hamas and Hezbollah, and there are hundreds of other examples around the world. So here we have the UN's member states urging the UN's member states to organize this treaty against the transfer of conventional arms, and almost all of them are engaged in the very practices the treaty is supposed to stop. Now, if these nations are so enthusiastic about stopping this trade, why don't they forget about a treaty and simply amend their own laws or improve their own enforcement procedures so they stop doing these things? The answer is very simple. They're not really all that interested in stopping these practices. What they are interested in doing is talking up a good game and, by the way, carrying on some mischief behind the scenes. Now, the mischief behind the scenes is going to take three forms. The first form of mischief is that the UN's treaty is going to subvert the U.S.'s excellent export control measures. The U.S. is one of the very few countries in the world that takes its responsibility as an arms seller seriously. The U.S. has twice as many arms embargoes as is required by the UN Security Council, and it actually enforces them. If you try to smuggle arms out of the United States, you are going to be pursued, you're going to be prosecuted, and you're going to go to jail. This is not true of most other states around the world. Most of the states around the world are very lax about these kind of things. Any treaty that the UN endorses, any treaty that all of these states around the world get together and sign, is going to have low standards, because there's no possible way that 200 nations around the world can agree to a treaty with high standards. If they all had high standards already, we wouldn't need a treaty.
What are the indirect effects of this treaty?
The indirect effect of this treaty is going to be to universalize standards for arms exports that are actually worse than the United States. And that's going to do a lot of damage to our ability to keep dangerous weapons out of the hands of states like Iran or Venezuela, never mind terrorist organizations. Because indirectly, at the very least, we're going to be losing control of our ability to control the export of these weapons. Other nations are going to take our place. Now, secondly, the treaty will do something even more damaging. Right now, in the UN General Assembly's resolutions on the subject, they refer explicitly to the idea that this treaty should give all states a right to buy weapons, a right to sell weapons, and a right to transfer weapons. That, according to the UN, is going to become an inherent recognized right of every single state in the world. Now, I have no problem whatsoever with decent democracies like the U.S., Israel, Britain, Japan, selling and buying weapons from each other. That's entirely in accord with the defense of human rights, and it's an entirely accord with their alliance relations with each other. But I'm entirely opposed to the idea that we should give Iran the right to import all the weapons it wants to, the idea that we should give Cuba the right to import all the weapons that it wants to, the right that we should give Venezuela or Zimbabwe the right to import all the arms that they want to. These places are dictatorships. They pay no respect to human rights. They are tyrannies. The idea that they should be given the same kind of importing and exporting rights that the democracies possess is simply a way to conceal the fact that this treaty is going to make it vastly easier for these places, almost all of which the U.S. has arms embargoes against, by the way, to buy, sell, and transfer weapons. Extending these kind of rights is immensely destructive for U.S. interests and for the interests of democracy around the world. The only people it is going to benefit are the dictators, the terrorists, and, by the way, the European arms sellers who are enthusiastic supporters of this treaty. The treaty potentially could do one more, a third dangerous thing. And that thing is to, at least indirectly, affect the application of the Second Amendment in the United States. The Second Amendment of the Constitution, of course, protects the right of Americans to bear arms. Now, in their resolutions in the General Assembly, the UN has said that this treaty must control the transfer of weapons not only to terrorists, but also to crime of any sort.
Well, it seems like this demand is a little open-ended.
This is a very open-ended kind of demand, especially because the UN did not refer to the inherent right of individuals in particular countries, like the United States, to bear arms. If you have to have a treaty that controls the transfer of weapons, including handguns, I should point out, to any criminal activity whatsoever, I am not sure I see how the Second Amendment is compatible with that requirement. There is ultimately no guarantee that any gun in the United States will not, at some indefinite point in the future, be involved in criminal activity. And a treaty that requires the United States to ensure that no guns ever reach criminals is ultimately incompatible with the Second Amendment. Now, some of our better friends in the United Nations, the UK, Japan, Australia, say they don't want the treaty to have this kind of effect, and I hope we can rely on them for that. But ultimately, the vast majority of the member nations of the United Nations do want the treaty to have this effect, and it will be a very difficult road for the Obama administration to follow to try to arrange a treaty that doesn't contain this kind of provision. Now, even if the treaty did contain this provision, it would be incompatible with the Constitution, and I am fairly confident the Supreme Court would judge that it was, in fact, incompatible. But, of course, the United States should not put itself in a position of signing treaties and setting up legal obligations like controlling the transfer in all circumstances of weapons to criminals inside the United States, should not set itself up with obligations like this that are incompatible with the Constitution. It only encourages people who want to subvert our constitutional freedoms at home to find new and ever more ingenious legal excuses to follow this. And, of course, it makes us look bad internationally because we are signing things that we're not actually following through on. Now, last week, the Obama administration took all this foolishness and made it even worse.
How did they do that?
The administration said that it would participate in the negotiations on this treaty, which the U.S. had previously not indicated a willingness to do. The U.S. is now going to participate in these negotiations, but only if they proceed on the basis of consensus. That is, everyone at the negotiations will have to agree in order for a treaty to actually be concluded. Well, that sounds like a good thing, but the problem is simply this. The U.S. has the Second Amendment. Almost no other country around the world has a similar sort of constitutional provision protecting the right of Americans to carry arms. The U.S. has exceptionally high export control standards for weapons. Very few, if any, other countries take this business as seriously as the United States does and actually prosecute people who break the law by exporting weapons to places they shouldn't go. Who in these negotiations is going to be the nation that resists the consensus? It's going to be the United States. The United States has high export control standards. The U.S. has a Second Amendment. Very few other countries have either of these things. So when this administration comes along and says, we will participate in these negotiations, but only if they are on the basis of consensus, what they are in effect doing is telling everyone in the nation and the world, go ahead, beat up on us, punch us around, use us as a punching bag, hit us as often as you like, because we are the ones who are breaking the world's consensus. We are the ones who are the obstacle to the negotiation, which can only be concluded on the basis of consensus because we've demanded it, and therefore we encourage you to reduce our export control standards as much as you possibly can, to make as many outrageous statements about the Second Amendment as you possibly can, because we are the ones who are going to obstruct the negotiation. This is a terrible negotiating position. It means that all the things the U.S. should be committed to defending in these negotiations will be portrayed by most of the nations in the world as the things that are obstructing them. So the U.S. will be put under relentless, continual pressure to, in some way or another, sign a treaty that affects the Second Amendment and to sign a treaty that weakens export control standards, exactly the things they shouldn't be doing. By signing on to these negotiations on the basis of consensus, the U.S. has done exactly the wrong thing and put itself in a position to be portrayed as the bad guy, the unilateralist, if you prefer, in these negotiations, whereas, in fact, it has good standards and protects the rights of its citizens, and those are the things we should be focusing on defending in the United Nations and elsewhere.
Ted Broman, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks again for having me on to talk to your listeners about this. I hope they'll continue to follow this important issue as it develops.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back. Savage. Despite what the Hollywood idiots would have you believe, Hugo Chavez is a dangerous threat to the world. Why? Recent reports tell us that he's trying to aid in Iran's search for nuclear weapons. Joining us today from the American Enterprise Institute is former ambassador to the Organization of American States, Roger Noriega, whose recent article on AEI.org says Chavez's criminal nuclear network is a grave and growing threat. Roger Noriega, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much, Michael, for having me. It's a really important opportunity to tell the American people about this threat that's right under our noses in South America.
What is going on here, do you think?
Well, the American people know that Hugo Chavez has essentially been waging an anti-American campaign for the better part of a decade. Really, since he has not been confronted, he's consolidated a network that involves both drug trafficking, the trafficking of cocaine from through Venezuela to Africa, up through North America, up into the Mexican border. And now, in a very serious escalation, supporting Iran's nuclear program by allowing Iran to harvest uranium from an important resource there in Venezuela. This is an extraordinarily important threat, a guy who has both the means and the motive to do us serious harm, to undermine international stability, really defying the UN sanctions program against Iran, has already supported terrorist groups here in the Western Hemisphere that's fighting against Colombia, an ally of ours. So Chavez is someone who means to do us harm. And this is a form of asymmetrical warfare against our interests. And I think it really requires a robust response from the United States and from our neighbors in South America.
Well, where is the mainstream media on this?
Well, the media, mainstream media is asleep at the switch as usual. Chavez learned from Fidel Castro to form this sort of human shield of glitterati, poets and fashion models and movie stars with not much between their ears to sort of lionize him in the media. And so it creates this sort of buffer where people sort of discard him as kind of a clownish, well-intended guy. There was an interview, for example, by Larry King two or three weeks ago where Larry King was asking him if he would rather have been a singer or a baseball player than president of Venezuela. Chavez must have fallen out of his chair with these softballs being lobbed at him. But the fact is the mainstream media doesn't want to recognize what constitutes a real threat to our interests in the hemisphere. They somehow see Chavez as sort of a misunderstood agrarian reformer who wants to just do right by his people and deliver some of the oil wealth to the poor people in his country. The reality is that he's stealing those resources, giving it to rogues throughout the world in order to build this political network that he then uses for his own interests. He has used the oil wealth, which is, you know, 10 times what it was when he first came into office 10 years ago, used that oil wealth to buy a tremendous amount of leverage in South America to where the diplomatic arm of the Western Hemisphere, the Organization of American States, is essentially bought and paid for by this guy. And so you can't have any sort of responsible multilateral response in the Americas because Chavez is wields too much influence in the region. So both in terms of the international community and the media here in the United States, Chavez has a pretty good buffer and an ability to do as he pleases. And frankly, the United States may have to act on its own to respond to this threat. Unfortunately, I don't see President Obama moving in the right direction at all in the Western Hemisphere policy, and I doubt that he has the resolve to confront Chavez.
What about Chavez's ties with the illegal drug trade?
Well, Chavez has had ties with the narco guerrillas that operate in Colombia back before he was president. And we now have, as of March of 2008, documented information that was captured in a guerrilla camp that chronicles his material and financial support to the guerrillas. And then as recently as last year, also evidence of Swedish rockets that were sold to the Venezuelan army in the 1970s ending up in the hands of these narco guerrillas. So this is a guy who's waging a proxy war against a neighboring country, and he's using narco-terrorist groups that are also then shoveling cocaine through Venezuela, operating with virtual impunity, where cocaine is moved from Venezuela up north through the Caribbean to the United States, up through Central America, through Mexico, and now this new transatlantic route to Africa. So it's become sort of a three-continent threat that this guy is aiding and abetting. And it undermines institutions. It threatens the governments of Colombia and throughout Central America and even Mexico, right up to our border. In other words, and it's a threat that actually pays for itself. So it's kind of an ingenious, although sinister, way of sort of waging warfare against his enemies. And it is a remarkably important threat that we need to confront with our neighbors.
Where do you see this going from here?
You know, it's very distressing that not only are we not confronting our foes, we're not supporting our friends. All signs point to Obama sort of punting on this issue. We saw how he grinned while Chavez handed him this anti-American book. What we didn't see is him sitting for 45 minutes being scolded by this little thug in Nicaragua, Daniel Ortega. The few forays that he's made into the region have been very uninspiring. The concern I have is that this criminal nuclear network that Chavez has developed is going to get worse and worse and may put us in serious jeopardy if we don't confront it.
Roger Noriega, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Great. Thank you very much for having me on. It's a great opportunity to tell the American people about this serious threat.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.